This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Division of the Arts and Humanities at the University of Chicago, offering an interdisciplinary Master of Arts program in humanities that provides individualized attention in a supporting community. The flexible curriculum allows students to focus coursework within a single department or engage with multiple disciplines, creating a uniquely tailored graduate degree. Applications now open for the April 30th deadline at humanities.uchicago.edu. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration blends classroom learning with extensive field education, guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. Inspire change. Shape the future.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Make sure you stick around because later in the episode, we'll break down today's biggest regional stories. But first, extra, extra, read all about it. For a lot of Chicagoans, the Chicago Reader isn't just a newspaper. It's where you found your next favorite band, weekend plans, or the city's latest and biggest investigations. Well, big news, the alt-weekly that's helped shape the city's cultural conversation since the 70s is entering a brand new chapter. On our newsstands tomorrow will be the second issue of The Reader as a monthly publication after a brief hiatus from print issues last year. We'll learn more about the paper's new era in this next conversation. At the table was Sarah Conway, who's a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and editor-in-chief of the Chicago Reader, and Katie Prout, who's features writer for the Chicago Reader. I started out by congratulating Katie and Sarah on making this pivot. Now here's Sarah with more on what the moment feels like for her.
It feels amazing. We are about to release our second monthly publication. February was our first month that we switched to a monthly print product, and it's our Best of Chicago, which is our iconic issue that looks at, you know, people, places, events, comedy shows, individuals doing remarkable things across the city, really summarizes that. And it's also deeply connected to a people's poll that we do.
Nice.
We had over 40,000 Chicagoans vote for, you know, the local businesses that they love, the hair salons they love, the, you know, best donut that they love.
And no gatekeeping.
And no gatekeeping.
This is great.
Yes, yes. I mean, that's the, I think, where we're moving as a reader. We want the publication that's been around since 1971 to really uplift and focus on the voices of community members. And when we say community members, we want it to be inclusive of all parts of the city. I mean, the thing about Chicago is that, you know, to quote Ariane Nettles, who I think we all mutually love.
Yes, we love Ariane Nettles. I hope she's listening.
I hope so too. I hope so too. And she's actually a contributor in the Best of Chicago this that's coming out tomorrow. You know, I would say that's a special thing about the issue. We have some amazing staff writers and contributors who really are defining the voice of the reader now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's Chicago really does set culture for the world, particularly Black Chicago. And so I think that, you know, the reader is a place where our best of is really celebrating the best parts of us.
Yeah. Well, Katie, how are you feeling about this transition? We'll get more into the product that folks can expect, but how are you feeling? This is a new era.
Oh, I'm thrilled. I'm really excited that Sarah's here. I have a lot of trust and faith in her as a reporter and as a leader.
It's going well.
And
this editor-in-chief thing is working out?
No, yeah. super generous with her time and advice. Very enthusiastic. Great ideas and tips for reporting, for looking at FOIAs. Those are Freedom of Information Act requests. All that. It's really great to get like a fresh sort of injection of energy and someone that really cares about news and really cares about Chicago.
I love that for you.
Me too.
And it's a time when, you know, we see many newspapers and alt-weeklies halting their print copies. Mm-hmm. the readers decided to bring print back, mm-hmm. right? So you're going in a different direction. Talk about why print is so valuable to local communities at a time where many Americans are just jumping online to get their news. You first, Katie.
Yeah, I mean, speaking for myself personally, my attention is completely shot by how much I stare at my phone. I find myself trying to read news stories or, you know, books on my phone, and I can't actually finish them. But when I have something tangible in my hand, it allows me to, like, really focus and absorb. But also print, especially with the reader, because we're free and we're throughout the city.
Yeah.
At this point, I think that having access to news coverage, and culture coverage, art coverage that's free is really important to reach young people, to reach older people, to reach, you know, I report with unhoused people in Chicago throughout the city. And I've had folks who read my stories that they've brought back to encampments, and then they find my contact information and contact me through that. And
nice.
As a reporter, there's nothing better than
That's literally
that kind of
the reward,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
that's
right?
Why we do this.
Totally. So they help keep me accountable. That's like, I think that kind of like physical copy allows for a real relationship between you and the world
yeah.
that you're reading about.
Say more on that, Sarah, and tell me how Chicagoans are responding so far.
Well, we've gotten some letters of people that they really like it.
Love letters?
Love letters to the reader, which I love. But I would say that what we've heard is that the reader is accessible and that we distribute at over 600 locations throughout the city. And that's north side, south side, west side, often at public transit, in coffee shops, in, you know, Chicago public libraries, and, you know, universities in the city. And mm-hmm. so one of the things about having a print product is going analog in this increasingly digital world that is so distracting, that we want to be able to have a unique monthly publication with some of our long-form features and investigations. Like, Katie launched a accountability series called Just Neighbors that
yes.
looks at the city's like complex interdepartmental process that actually takes down encampments and the human impact of that.
Is it a scary leap to take in that digital world that you just described?
You know, I find it very fun. And I will say why is because I am very distracted. I'm very distracted by my phone. I'm very distracted by my smart TV. I'm very distracted by, you know, the constant swirl of my inbox. And I am like, why not make a monthly print product that you can have beautiful local art and you can have beautiful local voices, like from contributors like Leslie Hurtado, Abana Biadico. Like, why not create something that shows the best of us, that shows that we have, you know, stories and columns that you can really sit with. Like, one thing we're launching in the March issue is that we have an archival column called Social Fabric.
Oh, what's that about?
So basically, when I started in December, I went into the archives in the reader's office. We have print copies of our first issue in 1971 to present. So of course I was like, what is the design and layout in the 70s and 80s? Well, let me tell you, it was very different.
I bet.
Yes. And one of the things I noticed that the old reader, the OG reader staff were doing is that they would actually have these community spreads of photographs from photojournalists. And I was like, wouldn't it be very interesting if we, you know, having this monthly print publication, we create this like centerfold where we have images. And so, of course, you know, I started working and thinking about this and collaborated with our art team. And basically, we came up with a photo spread. The first one's launching in the March issue, which is basically highlighting archival scanner and photojournalism work in Chicago. And actually, Nuestro Chicago Archives is like the first spread.
Oh, okay.
And Thais, the founder of Nuestro Chicago Archives, which is an Instagram account that encourages people from you know, across Chicago's Latino communities to submit their family photos pre-2008, so pre, you know, digitization.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so Thais, like, curated a spread around, like, basically community joy. And I think that that's one of the undercurrents in the Best of Chicago issue that we have, is that we really look back at the past year and think about, like, what were the best parts of us? And I think that in many ways, it's the ways that people still build community, not for attention, but to create spaces where we can have connection and also take care of one another yeah. in the times that we're in. And so, you know, we paired that with, we have an amazing op-ed that's really looking at, you know, the way that art in Latino communities is a form of resistance, and that art is inherently political. political and how we need it more now more than ever.
Mm-hmm.
So lots
to look forward to in tomorrow's
lots
issue.
Lots to look forward to. Pick up a copy.
Yes. Katie, tell us more about the, because, you know, of course, we know the Reader for its amazing investigations. Sarah's already boasted on your Just Neighbors series that's coming up. But tell us more, because, I mean, you're doing some great work here because you're not just looking at the city's homeless encampment sweeps, but you're looking at the impact of policy from city officials on these communities.
Yeah. I've been visiting and making relationships with people in encampments throughout the city since 2020. And something that I have, every encampment is different. Every person is different. Needs vary across the spectrum. But,
and can I just say the name of the series?
Oh,
brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
I think that might have been a Sarah. We had a
Just back, Neighbors.
Yeah, we were trying to go back and forth. Like, what's the sort of like ethos? Like, what are we trying to get at here? And I think
you hit the nail on the head with that.
Thank you. Yeah, these are our neighbors, people that are living and cooking and caring for one another and have jobs to go to and are paying taxes. And I think that a lot of reporting has been done around the perceived dangers of encampments for housed folks or people that are using public parks for baseball or activities. But I wanted to take a look at pause for a moment, at least with the first story that I did in February, and say, what is an encampment? What is an encampment sweep? What happens during one? And does this actually reduce homelessness? Do encampment sweeps help the folks who live there as they're getting evicted from their home get into a permanent house, a permanent apartment? And the answer so far from housing workers that I know, that I interviewed for the series and from unhoused people themselves is no. Many times folks end up, some people do get into temporary shelters or apartments, but many people end up, doubled up again, just simply moving down the street to a different park, a different viaduct, or sort of just disappearing altogether. And that really disrupts abilities to stay on track if you are on a housing list.
Right.
A lot of folks don't have phones. So, housing workers depend on visiting them in person at certain days and times to continue that connection.
Such
that
great
momentum.
Reporting. Yeah. Sarah, Noisy Creek, which is a Seattle-based startup, acquired the Chicago Reader back in August. And we've seen this shift among local newspapers, I think, in the past decade or so, with the rise of startups and nonprofit organizations just working hard to sustain local journalism. Talk to us a little bit more about this change in your business model. What does that look like? How is Noisy Creek working with the Reader and other alt weeklies around the country?
So what I find compelling about Noisy Creek and the Reader being a part of its network of alt newspapers is that they have a decentralized model. So they also own the Seattle Stranger, which is kind of like a sister paper to the Reader. And they own the Portland Mercury, another sister paper. These are like historic alt newspapers that are very similar to the legacy of the Reader in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that Noisy Creek functions is that it is kind of like a shared common ops. We have the administrative things that are often very burdensome for local newspapers. We share resources, but we have editorial autonomy. So the things that are being published in the Stranger or in the Mercury or the Reader are really determined based off of the staff, and then also what are the local needs of alternative news in those cities. The nice thing is that we are part of this constellation of alt newspapers, I should say, that can share ideas, that can syndicate stories,
mm-hmm.
that, we know what's going on in Seattle and Portland because now we have counterparts there.
That's great.
And I'm like, that's pretty cool. Like, I haven't heard of a model like that. And so it's interesting to be a part of a company that's how they're approaching news ownership.
You realize how similar we are in some ways.
Yeah,
right?
Definitely.
When you read what's the top story there.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And it's inspiring, and it's cool to be able to work with local reporters in other cities. But you both have your interests of what you are covering. I would say the other thing that about Noisy Creek is that it's found a funding model that obviously is advertising, but also is looking to, there's a product called Everout, which is kind of like It's like an event website that they're going to be launching one soon in Chicago, that they've successfully done this in Seattle and Portland as a way to generate more revenue for the company. So I think that they're very smart, clever people at Noisy Creek. And it's been really interesting to be able to be in a local newsroom, which is like where my heart is.
Yes.
It's like, I love us. I love Chicago. I love local news.
And just the collaboration that can happen.
Yes.
Right? In a newsroom.
Yes.
Space.
Exactly. And that's the thing is about Chicago is that we have such a rich local news ecosystem that I think is so unique in the country. And we don't even realize that, like, we have so many nonprofit newsrooms. We have so many independent newsrooms here. And we all collaborate and support one another.
When I moved here, I was able to get up to speed fast. The Tribe, Southside Weekly, I was just reading everything. There was so much content.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, like, also about, you know, kind of to tie it back to the print value is that we have many digital-only newsrooms here. And the Reader, as well as, like, Southside Weekly, there were places where we can collaborate with our other local newsrooms and publish their work so that you can hit that print distribution as well.
Well, Katie, leave us with this. I mean, Sarah's talked about, you know, some of the short and longer-term vision here with the Reader. What would success look like for you? What are your hopes for the paper?
For the paper?
Yeah.
I mean, I want to...
And just your involvement in community journalism overall.
I mean, I want us to be even more so, like, in physically in the community. So, like, my hopes would be that we become more of a go-to for Chicagoans across the city, and that our reporters and editors ourselves are in different neighborhoods. I've long wanted to do, like, a Reader office hours outside of, like, a Blue Line or a Green Line or a Red Line stop.
Oh, it'll happen.
Just, like, you know, set up a little table and, like, here's some, like, ask a journalist, like, what do you think we need to investigate in your neighborhood?
Or,
like,
that is cool.
Hey, you have, like, you're a DJ and you have, like, a set coming up. You want to spread the word out? Or, yeah, you're doing, like, mutual aid. Like, we'll be right there. Like, come talk to us.
And where can folks find your latest issue tomorrow?
We have go to chicagoreader.com. We have a map of over the 600 sites, and the issues will be getting distributed between Wednesday and Saturday. So pop by in that time frame. You're going to find a copy. And also, we'll be publishing stories from the March issue starting tomorrow on our website. So come on by, send us a DM or comment on our Instagram. We want to hear
it.
From you. You will find us outside at a CTA one day soon.
Sarah Conway is outside, and she's also editor-in-chief of the Chicago Reader. And Katie Proud is a features writer for the Reader. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you so much.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube, but what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
Now for a look at the top stories of the day in Chicago and Illinois. From Amazon drone delivery taking over the Chicago burbs to some good news for ballet lovers. At the table was Claire Lane, WBEZ's Morning Edition anchor, Courtney Kippers, WBEZ's arts and culture reporter, and Javon Paris, WBEZ's morning editor. My first question for the panel, did anyone happen to wake up early enough to catch the blood moon? Here's Claire with her excuse for why she missed it.
I looked out of our WBEZ windows, and there was no blood moon
you
to be
didn't
seen.
See it?
I didn't even know it was happening.
Were
so.
You looking at the right time? Because it was
I
around
was looking at the
5
right time. 5:04, and it was supposed to be visible for an hour. And so I went back out at 5:44, still nada. So not so lucky for us here. With the cloud coverage, and we had some light rain this morning as well, so blame the weatherman.
That's true. You know, I looked out this morning, but that was just me being a nosy neighbor. It was around 4-something, so I was a little early, and I was like, where's the blood moon? Didn't see it just yet, so I then assumed that it just didn't happen.
That's how it works, right?
That's how it works. If I didn't see it, It didn't happen.
Hate to disappoint you off the break. I didn't even know about it.
You didn't know about
did
it.
Did not know about that, which is not a great sign for an editor to not know about something, but I didn't know about it.
All right. Well, that's an X for you right off the bat.
Thank you very much.
Let's jump to national news, Claire. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem testifies today in the Senate. What should we know?
So she's testifying right now. This is all as backlash continues to grow over deadly immigration enforcement actions led by President Trump. We know here in Illinois, several political leaders have outright called for Noem's impeachment. And so she's appearing before the Judiciary Committee. This is actually her first hearing since two protesters, as we remember, were killed in Minneapolis by Homeland Security officers. So she's expected to undergo some very fierce questioning, especially from Democrats who say officers under her control have abused their power, used excessive force, and essentially just violated people's constitutional rights. We know this well here in Chicago. Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois is actually the leader of the Judiciary Committee.
Yeah, and any word from him?
Yeah, before, of course, before the hearing, he issued a statement saying a number of things, but calling Secretary Noem the public face for an abominable anti-immigrant crusade. So this is going to be big news throughout the day. We'll have the latest for you, certainly.
Anything from Duckworth?
Not yet that I've seen.
But
statements will be coming along.
I'm sure she'll have something to say. Javon, over to you. Amazon drone delivery. I think it's started. It's popping back in the headlines.
It's back in the headlines. And
what's
this summer,
going on?
Madison and Markham are going to be having drone delivery in Chicago this summer. Now, this is the fifth state following Arizona, Florida, Kansas, and Michigan to launch this, and Texas first did it in 2022. They're going to be 15 drones weighing each 80 pounds, and they're going to be stationed at each fulfillment center in Madison and Markham. They should have about 60% of the inventory there.
Wow.
Which is a little frightening to me, the drone aspect of it, but I'm getting with the times.
Wow. Yeah. So they're starting out in the suburbs, and Matson and Markham aren't the first Illinois suburbs that Amazon's eyeing for the drone delivery.
Correct.
Right?
And the FAA regulated deliveries can only deliver something during called civil twilight hours, a term I had never heard before, which is 30 minutes before sunrise and 30 minutes before sunset. So there's not going to be any like noon drones, at least off the bat.
Well, yeah, this is going to be very interesting to see. I mean, Courtney, can you imagine just like walking by someone's house and here comes an Amazon drone
dropping your toilet paper
with your doorstep.
Courtney's still kicking the robots on the streets. I saw her in Ukrainian Village.
The robot delivery are in Ukrainian Village now.
They're everywhere.
I've been seeing them in my neighborhood.
Oh, my goodness. So Amazon plans to roll this out pretty soon.
Yes, in the summer. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow. Can't wait. Courtney, Chicago has, 77 neighborhoods?
That's right.
I think each of our neighborhoods, though, has its own pretty distinct identity. And now the Loop has kind of got its own official identity. What's going on?
Yeah. So on Friday, hundreds of arts and civic leaders, they gathered for the Chicago Loop Alliance's annual meeting. And that's where they rolled out this idea of the Loop Arts District, which, like you said, is sort of an effort to brand the Loop as Chicago's official arts district. This is just the first announcement. So we'll see what this looks like actually in practice. But the Alliance board chair, Kamina Brooks, told me that they're going to be rolling this out throughout the year. So we're going to see more of this.
So what's the goal here? I mean, what's the draw in marketing the Loop as the art district?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think there are a couple things at play. Of course, it's a tough moment for the arts. We've seen the federal government pull back its support for the sector. And at the same time, city and state arts funding has been stagnant. And then we've got the Loop that wants to bring foot traffic and people back into the area post-COVID and draw people downtown. So I think with a lot of arts infrastructure in the area already, theaters, museums, I think they're trying to put these two things together and sort of brand it more intentionally. And we'll see. We'll see if, you know, in a year from now, we're meeting up for lunch in the Loop Arts District, Sasha.
But we have
seen. I feel like we will be.
True Chicago data, year after year, especially since the pandemic, people are coming downtown to go to shows.
Totally.
Joffrey has record-breaking numbers, right, the past couple of years. So it sort of makes sense from a marketing standpoint to pick now.
Totally. And festivals, we know, are a big driver. The city's cultural scene is a big driver of tourism,
right,
like we've talked about.
And Javon, you're pretty new to Chicago. Have you had a summer here yet?
I have not had a summer here. I just arrived here in November.
Summertime shy.
So that's what I understand is is going to make me love the city, because moving here in November was like an experience. If I'm being
oh,
honest.
Yes.
An experience. Been there.
Yeah, I moved in January, even dumber. Now, Courtney, sticking with you for a moment, because you are just full of good news today. For folks who love ballet, what do you got?
Ooh, it's a fun weekend for dance in Chicago. Tyler Peck is coming to town. For folks who are not familiar, she's a principal dancer with the New York City Ballet. Mm-hmm. And also, I will say, she's a great follow on Instagram, where she offers lots of behind-the-scenes content. And so she's bringing the show Turn It Out with Tyler Peck and Friends to the auditorium on Saturday and Sunday.
Oh, that's exciting. Now, you talked to her. What did she have to say about, like, you know, why this show is so personal and what folks can expect when they show up?
Totally. She calls it her love letter to dance. There are four works in the show that have all been created specifically for this evening, three of which she dances in and one of which she choreographed, so an original from her. And it's really something different than you would see her do at the New York City Ballet. It's lots of different genres of dance. And also, it's a rare chance to see Peck without having to travel. She does not appear in Chicago very often.
Mm, yeah, I'm looking at the images on your story that's up right now at WBEZ.org. I mean, she is in fantastic shape. And just I'm seeing the passion being emoted through a photo.
Totally, totally. And she appears with her husband, too.
Yes.
So real life
love
story.
Oh, that's special. Let's check out another headline here on our radar, Javon. City Colleges of Chicago and Cook County Health, they are teaming up. Why and what for?
So, you know, the industry can be, any industry can be tough to break in initially. And so the City Colleges of Chicago and the Cook County Health, they're going to team up to train and place more Chicagoans in healthcare jobs over the next 3 years. It's going to be backed by a $5 million investment from the Pritzker-Traubert Foundation. And through the initiative, the City Colleges are going to get more access to clinical studies and help people land their first job in the healthcare industry. So any industry can be tough to break in.
Yes.
Especially healthcare. So
any specific jobs on their radar?
Nurses.
Yeah.
Usually aren't registered. Nurses are the initial breaking jobs in. So that's going to be a key one that they focus on.
Mm-hmm. Less than 2 years ago, Claire, Chicago hosted the DNC, the Democratic National Convention. Who could forget?
Remember when you thought Beyonce was coming?
I freaked out.
We all thought Beyonce was coming, I will say.
That was a good rumor. It was headlines, people
joke.
Were tuned in.
Yeah. For a beehiver like me. Well, the city is actually looking to give an encore, is that right?
That is true. Chicago, yet again, a front runner to host the DNC now in 2028. In a statement yesterday, DNC says Chicago, this is also with Atlanta, Boston, Denver, and Philly, the front runners to host that 2028 convention. So each of the cities is going to get that initial sort of site visit, scope out. This spring, the team behind the Chicago bid said in a statement that they're proud to be in consideration and they are ready to do it again.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really big deal, right? We made such a good impression when it came around. And I remember the city has never looked so clean.
Well, we also sort of like rehabbed a whole Green Line station to accommodate. Remember
That's
the Damon
right.
station? There was a lot of office buildings that were rehabbed very quickly. I mean, it brought a lot of commerce to Chicago, or neighborhoods as well, not just downtown. So
and
this was everywhere.
A lot of foot traffic.
Yeah, the United Center was the host, so we'll see, you know, if that's potentially where it's going to be again or if they're looking on branching out. But people in Chicago spending money, always a good thing.
Oh, yeah, that's for sure. What else are you following, Claire?
So this is something you've covered on your show extensively, covering multiple angles, but there's a new group of Chicagoans that are speaking out in support of the Quantum Campus being built along Lake Michigan.
Oh, okay.
So some residents and business owners are expressing environmental and economic concerns in the past, as we know, but Southeast Neighbors for Quantum, that's the group's name, says the multi-billion dollar park will create jobs for area residents and increase traffic into local businesses. So yet another sort of camp saying this could be a good thing.
Yeah, always multiple sides to these stories.
Which you cover so well.
Thanks, Claire. Now, Courtney, you always know the scoop on, you know, what's new, what's cool, what's happening in town. I mean, I need to start following your social pages a little more closely. But tell us more. What shows are coming up that are on your radar?
Yeah, like I said, it's a big dance weekend. On Sunday, Chicago dancer and choreographer Nezhla Yatkin is showing her piece, The Other Witch, at the Epiphany Center for the Arts. And it is this very cool, a little bit spooky ode to women.
I should tell listeners that you're dancing right now as you describe.
Not
the
nearly
Other Witch.
As well as
right,
she
Javon?
Will be dancing.
Got rhythm for sure.
She is swaying in the studios this morning.
But it's really good timing. She's performing on International Women's Day, and this is really a piece that is an ode to the power of womankind. So I definitely recommend checking that out. I got to sit through a dress rehearsal and it's really cool.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
How does it feel for you getting that like first glance, that behind the scenes look? I love seeing how things are made. Is that something that tickles your fancy too?
Love it. Love it. We've got the best jobs ever. I mean, it is so amazing to sit in and see how this art gets made right here in our city. A lot of work goes into every single show that ends up on stage.
Jealous. Javon, heads up for folks looking for a potentially fun summer job.
So yeah, like you were just saying, Courtney, if you want to be behind the scenes, see how the sausage is made as part of Lollapalooza or Swing music festivals, they're looking for seasonal help. Now, Malcolm X College is going to be hosting a job fair this Wednesday, 3 to 7 p.m. You have to be 18 years old to get a job.
I qualify, yes.
I think
all
you
right.
do. But if you want to come down and apply for a gig to work Lollapalooza or the Sueños Festival, head down to Malcolm X College. And it's not just a job fair. They have panel discussions about A&R and other industry-related topics. So,
that's really cool.
You can really get some good intel on Wednesdays. So.
Even if you don't get the job, you walk out with some knowledge.
Exactly.
That sounds like this should be a reality show.
It does.
The people working behind the scenes at Lollapalooza.
I think I'm still in the mental state from watching the America's Next Top Model documentary recently. So I'm in behind the scenes of how these industries work mode. But music festivals, that would have been a cool and fun summer job as a teen. What did you all do as teens? Did you have summer jobs?
My summer, I volunteered at a radio station. And the summer that I volunteered, Prince came to town.
Oh.
So I had an opportunity to work that concert.
You know how to pick them.
Exactly. So you have to volunteer. It wasn't a paid gig, but that volunteer opportunity was one that I will never forget.
Amazing. What about you, Courtney?
I was a counselor at a day camp, so I pretended to play a lot of dodgeball while I encouraged 10-year-olds to play dodgeball amongst
and you
themselves.
Made bracelets on the side.
100%. You know I can make a bracelet.
WBEZ's Courtney Kippers, Claire Lane, and Javon Paris.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Leah Sainz-Gutenberg, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in-the-loop. Thanks for listening.
WBEZ has a stacked lineup of events this spring with must-see musicians like Patti Smith and Ani DeFranco and compelling authors like Patrick Radden Keefe along with Gillian Flynn. For more, go to wbez.org/events.